What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Hot Shots. I'm Jedi. With me always is Houdini and D-Paw. What's poppin', boys?
How we doing?
What's up, fellas? Great to see you as always.
D-Paw, you're watching your Steelers. How are they doing so far?
Watching the Steelers, yep, playing out in Vegas. It's currently tied 7-7, I believe. So it's going to be a tight one. Hopefully the Steelers can make enough plays to win the game.
Hopefully. We got a lot to talk about today. A lot of stuff in baseball, a lot of stuff in college football, and a lot of stuff in the NFL. So let's get right into it. Miguel Cabrera is going to be playing his last major league game this week. Very, very crazy to think about. This dude has been around for so long. Everybody's been giving him gifts for his fantastic career that he's had. The future Hall of Famer last week was actually gifted an $80 bottle of wine by the Oakland Athletics, which is interesting because if you did not know, he is a recovering alcoholic, so it was an interesting gift choice. But also, you couldn't give him anything better.
Didn't know that?
I think I forgot that, but oh my gosh. Just how perfect for Oakland, just the whole thing. A, giving a bottle of wine to a recovering alcoholic, and then B, it being an $80 bottle of wine for a future Hall of Famer. Like, so Oakland, bro.
We couldn't do anything better? Like, come on.
Dude, the only thing that I could think about was that scene from Meet the Parents where he's like, you have any $80 or $100 bottles of wine? And the guy's like, you can get a whole bunch of mums. I mean, dude, it shouldn't surprise anybody. You know what I mean? Like, it really shouldn't surprise anybody.
It's just an Oakland A's thing. Just I mean, Oakland, moving back to Miguel Cabrera, though, he's obviously had a fantastic career. Only 27 players have won the Triple Crown, and he was one of them in 2012. He almost did it again in 2013, but he was short of the home runs with Chris Davis actually hit 53 that year, if you remember that. The Orioles won, not the Athletics, Chris Davis. But Miggy's finishing his career with over 500 home runs, around 3,100 hits, almost 1,900 RBIs, and a career batting average over 300 at 307. He's also a two-time MVP, 2003 World Series champ with the Marlins, 7-time Silver Slugger, 12-time All-Star, and a 4-time batting title champ.
I'm so sorry.
That honestly was very fitting.
Yeah, Jedi, hey, my mic cut out. Could you repeat that entire list again for me, please? That, like, what an impressive list, man. Like, just obviously first ballot Hall of Famer. Like, you just listed everything on there, man. Just talk about, like, a joy. He brought so much joy to the game, too. Like, just a great ball player. One of the best hitters of all time, obviously. I mean, like, what did you just say? Career 307 hitter? Like, that just doesn't happen anymore.
That's what I was going to say, is that that's definitely a rarity now with all these guys striking out a lot and out of contact guys. A guy that hits over 300 his entire career, very impressive.
And yeah, he played since he was 18 too, right?
Yeah. And there's like two phases to Miggy's career, right? There's skinny Miggy, and then there's Miggy.
Yes, yes, yes.
Right? So, like, when I think of Miguel Cabrera, like, my favorite Miggy moment was actually in the 2003 World Series against the Yankees. Clemens gives him chin music, and he's like 18, and goes Oppo Taco in the World Series at 18, 19 years old, and doesn't bat an eye at a 99-mile-an-hour fastball at his chin, right? So skinny Miggy was dangerous. Miggy was just as dangerous, right? So I the evolution of his career was awesome. I think he's one of the best pure hitters I've ever seen.
Yeah, that home run that you're mentioning about was in Game 4 of the 2003 World Series, gave them a 2-0 lead. But the one little Miggy highlight that I ended up taking, Miguel Cabrera hit a pitch out of the batter's box, if you remember, against the Orioles when they were trying to intentionally walk him.
Yes.
This is also in his Marlins days, which is, it's just hilarious if you ever see it. It's awesome to watch. But
question.
It's so Miggy.
Question, did he only play in Miami and Detroit, right? I can't remember him anywhere else, yeah.
Yep, those two teams only. I think he was in Miami for about 3 years, and then he got traded.
Imagine what that lineup would have looked like with Yelich, Ozuna, Stanton, Miggy,
Jose Fernandez,
D. Gordon, like that JT.
Stud.
Oh, my God.
That was a really fantastic team that just never really panned out. But anyway, though, congrats, Miguel Cabrera, on a fantastic career. enjoy your retirement, because we're gonna see you very soon in Cooperstown. Other baseball news: Joey Votto also might have played his last game in Cincinnati. Votto has been rumored that he might be retiring. The lifetime Cincinnati Red was pulled from the game today on Sunday, September 24th. After getting a single in the eighth inning, he was greeted with a huge curtain call. It was a great moment for him. I'm definitely glad that he got it. For all the stuff that he's done in that city, he's been a good person for the city of Cincinnati itself, too. Do you think that he's a future Hall of Famer? He's definitely a Reds legend, and will definitely have his number retired and all that sort of stuff, I think, eventually. But is he a Hall of Famer? Because he only played around 14 years.
Yeah,
but the batting average is very high. Batting average is very high. I think Dino's going to be looking it up for us right now.
I think he had a crazy high on-base percentage, too. Like, historically, he walked a lot, like, was a really good hitter. Like, understood the science of hitting and everything.
So his career, you're looking at a 64 WAR, 2,100 hits, 356 bombs, 295 career average, 1,100 runs, 1,100 RBIs, 80 stolen bases, a 409 OBP, a 511 wow. slugging, a 921 OPS. It's the definition of a bubble.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say the Hall of Very Good, for sure. I don't quite know. Maybe he's one of the guys that, it takes a couple years. Because he was, I feel like, universally liked. Like, just across the league, a lot of people respected him. And, he had a couple tussles. But for the most part, a pretty likable guy. And, definitely a clubhouse guy. Like, everybody speaks so highly of him.
Yeah, he was a six-time All-Star and did win the MVP.
Did he ever win a Silver Slugger or anything? You said he did win MVP?
He did win the MVP in 2010.
Six-time All-Star, okay. Any gold gloves?
Yeah. One.
Okay. I mean, that's helping his case. Yeah, you're right, Dino. Definition of a bubble.
Yeah, I think he might, he might get in at some point. It's not going to be first ballot. Yeah, it won't be first ballot. But you ever want to listen to someone talk about hitting and analyzing their approach and their swing? Votto's really good at it.
And he studied the science of hitting from Ted Williams. There's a couple interviews about him talking about it in depth. Pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, if this is the end for Joey Votto, you've had a fantastic career too, and you were very fun to watch. It's so sad. All these people that I personally grew up with, they're all retiring. I feel so old. I'm waiting for the I'm waiting for the post for Robinson Cano. When Robinson Cano retires, that'll be a sad day for me, because I loved that dude growing up.
I mean, do you need a post? I feel like it's
it's done, brother.
I do need a post to make it official, because there's still hope in my head that someone will pick him up.
All right, check your Insta later tonight, Jedi.
My man retired 3 years ago. Yeah.
Colorado and Oregon faced off this weekend, and it wasn't pretty by any means. Colorado lost 42-6. Besides the point that we saw Colorado finally face a really good team in Oregon, what I find interesting is actually what Oregon's head coach said. Dan Lanning commented during his pregame speech, "They're fighting for clicks," talking about Colorado, "while we're fighting for wins." And he made it
personal.
Thank you, Dion. It was personal, but not personal enough, because they didn't play to the hype.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough one, right? So I'm going to take multiple angles here. One is, if I'm an 18 or 19 year old kid and I'm going to go play for anybody, I never would have expected myself to go to play to Colorado. But now that Dion's there, that's probably a top four or five choice, right?
So, at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, definitely at the it's still Pac-12, right? So, mm-hmm. Still Power 5 football as of right now. Now, I don't know what those conferences are going to look like. But, look, Dion has been out there changing people's lives. And I don't mean just players. He brought, administration, compliance officers, athletic trainers from Jackson State to Colorado. So, Dion has the utmost respect on this podcast. However, with the way that those two teams were going to match up, them being ranked 19 is a disservice for the University of Colorado, right? They were set up to fail this week by playing an established Oregon team that is fighting to get into the playoff, if not compete for a national championship. So it was kind of like they were set up to fail. And I don't necessarily think that Colorado is playing for clicks. I wouldn't even go that far. If I was in that locker room, yeah, it might get me hype. It's not going to get me as hype as rocking those Oregon uniforms. So I did think that the speech was a little on the weak side. But let's be honest here. People are going to have their way with Colorado this season. When Prime starts getting his recruits, they're going to be...
Might be a different story, yeah.
It's going to be a completely different story. Those guys that were going to Oregon might not be going to Oregon anymore. So they can have their fun with Deion now all they want. It's not going to last long.
And you know what it's going to be?
It's personal.
It's going to be personal. And if he takes an SEC or an ACC job, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, do they do it for clicks? Yeah, I think partially. I think that's part of it. That's what it's designed for. Is it terrible, in my opinion? No, not at all. That's the day and age we're in. And he playing the transfer portal is ruffling a lot of feathers. But once again, that's where we are. NIL territory, uncharted. That's where we are, though. He's playing by the rules. You can't fault him for that. But you're right, Dean. They better get him this year, because if he keeps pulling in stud, or if he keeps pulling in recruiting classes and players like Travis Hunter, you know, lights out, dude. They could be absolutely brutal in the Big 12 whenever they move there next year. So get it in now, because yeah, it's the freight train's coming.
Now, Deion did say after the game, he said in quote, "It was a good old fashioned butt kicking." So props to Coach Prime for being a leader and owning up to it. You know, he took the loss, you know, basically saying, hey, you can't win them all. They were better than us today, and we got to improve and be better. So great mindset for a college coach and a leader. But so you guys really don't think fighting for clicks at all, there's some truth to that? The only reason I say this, too, is because I want to mention Deion actually has a social media guy at Well Off Media. You can look him up on YouTube, and he makes basically a reality show is what I'd call it, a little bit of a vlog type of style. He follows the team. He follows Deion everywhere they go. I mean, his son, the quarterback on the team, even has his own YouTube channel with clickbait-worthy content. I think there's a little bit of truth to this. I mean, absolutely. But no matter what, wherever Deion goes, there's going to be headlines. It's an interesting topic. It's one of the more interesting topics that there have been in college football.
Look, why does Deion get attention? He was a two-sport athlete. He was really freaking good at both sports, right? Two, he talks. And 99% of the time, he backs up his talk. When they don't, he owns it. Like I said, I've said this before. He's a great coach, great motivator, great leader, and good leaders hold themselves accountable when their team doesn't show up. But when you look at like offensive line versus defensive line and that type of game, the speed on the field is not comparable. So like, do I think they fight for clicks? I mean, yeah, sure. But I think every single team in the world is trying to get some sort of social media presence for recruits, for boosters, all that stuff. So I don't necessarily feel it's a bad thing. Like DePalma said, we're in this world. Right. And if that means that that's what he has to do to get NIL money and all that type of stuff, that's fine. But I will reiterate this. When they move to the Big 12 and he's getting Power 5 athletes and he's stealing recruits from the Bamas, the LSUs, the Auburns, the Miamis, for that matter, the Florida States, all that stuff, you're going to see a completely different Colorado team.
Yeah, this school has definitely made a lot of money this season just from him alone and all the hype. So they're getting their money's worth. Continuing on, though, with college football, wild game on Saturday night with Ohio State and Notre Dame. The Buckeyes beat the Fighting Irish 17-14 in a wild finish on the final play of the game with a touchdown at the one-yard line. Now, Notre Dame only had 10 players on the field, missing one guy on the field. Brutal. So we're calling this just absolutely cost them the game, potentially. Marcus Freeman, the Notre Dame head coach, said that it was just a miscommunication. He didn't have any more timeouts, so he couldn't do anything about it until it was too late. It was a huge mistake on this part. Now, we know how crucial wins are, and when you lose one game in college football, it's okay, but once you lose two, you're in a scary territory to where it might cost your season. Now Notre Dame is 4-1. They have a few teams coming up down the road that are going to be very tough. In the next 3 weeks alone, they play Duke, who's ranked 17, Louisville at 33, and then they play USC, who's 7. Is this something that just cost their season?
I mean, it's typical Notre Dame. It's typical Notre Dame. Any Notre Dame fan you talk to will tell you it's games like this that they're supposed to win and they never do. But it wasn't necessarily the 10 guys on defense that I had a problem with. I didn't have a problem with that. It was the play before to even allow them to get to the one. Yep. That was the issue. Prevent defense prevents wins. That has always been the motto. I don't know why we're playing soft. You know what I mean? To even allow them. I think by the time the safeties kind of dropped back, they were 5 yards into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, give up the underneath. They had no timeouts. give up the first down. They were going to have to spike it anyway. Take your chances from the 10. Completely different type of scenario. You can eliminate the run at that point. But at the 1 yard line, 3 seconds left, just the way that the setup was, you kind of knew that the run was coming, but it's a typical Notre Dame loss. It will probably haunt them later on in the year. I don't want to say their season's done, though, because I do think they're really good.
Yeah, I mean, they got nobody to blame but themselves on it. Just on that last drive alone, they had 2 third-and-longs and 2 fourth-and-longs that they let Ohio State convert, and Ohio State made plays when they had to win the game. Great game, though. It was an all-timer. Maybe not an all-timer, you know what I mean. It was a great game, though. I think Notre Dame, they do have a good squad. I think they have a better squad than Ohio State, so we'll see how that pans out for the rest of the year. It's going to come down to that SC game. If Notre Dame can beat SC, which they can hang with Southern Cal, they're going to have to put up more points than that because Southern Cal will, but I think it comes down to that game. You almost chalk that up knowing that Notre Dame is going to have a loss somewhere along the way because they play a tough schedule, but 2 losses I don't think you get in this year in the playoff, maybe whenever they expand it next year.
Yeah, I don't think there's a scenario where they're going to sweep these next in the next 3 weeks. I do think that they're going to lose at least one of these games.
They do have the potential to win all of these games, though. Their defense is that good.
Yeah, like, I'm not, like, Duke's decent. Like, they're not bad. They're not great. They should win that game, all in all. Like, they're way more talented. You look at the players that they have, they should win that game. Louisville, decent squad. They should win that game. And then what'd you say? SC was the last one then, Jedi?
Look, like, Southern Cal, Notre Dame is always that game that you're either going to scratch your head on. It's a great rivalry,
right.
Yeah. Wasn't it the year that who scored at the one that year?
It was the Bush push. Reggie Bush got pushed in.
It was the Bush push, yeah. So, like,
pushed in Matt Leinart.
They got their hands full, but I do think this Notre Dame team is really good, and finally they have a quarterback in Hartman that can keep them kind of in a game.
And those uniforms, my God, were those nice.
Oh, man, those are beautiful, dude. Those were beautiful. But hold on. But you know what? Like, there's teams out there that I thought were going to be undefeated. Like, Alabama's in a world of hurt right now. So this might be one of the first years you don't see Bama even finish in the top 10.
And historically, USC will trip up in a game they should win. So they're probably going to have a loss, too. They got to play Oregon probably in the Pac-12 championship. They might have 2 losses coming out of it too. So it's going to be a little crazy. Can Texas, you know, hang on to it? Like, go through the whole Big 12 season without tripping up? You never know.
And this is why the college football expansion playoff is so important.
Yeah.
It's time for your favorite segment, though, on Hot Shots. Baseball edition this time. It's time for Truth or Fluke. First up, Ronald Acuna Jr. just reached 40-40. Is he going to reach 40-75? He's at 68 stolen bases right now. I'm going to go with fluke here. I think that it's just a little too much. 7 stolen bases and about a week left. I don't know.
Yeah, wait, I'm going to
how many stolen bases does he have?
68.
Okay. So you want 40-75? I'm going to put this in as a fluke. I think it's too late. Now, hold on. You including playoffs?
No.
It's a fluke.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think 7's too many. If you would have gave me another, like, 3 or 4, I think I'm taking that. But, you know, 7's just a little too much, especially going into the playoffs. They already clinched it. They can't improve their position or anything. You know, don't go crazy trying to steal all these bags and get yourself hurt somewhere. Your future MVP, though, Jedi, not Freddie Freeman. Let the record state, not Freddie Freeman.
All right. Mookie Betts just had probably the best second place finish in MLB history, though.
I mean, so did Olsen, so did Freeman.
Yep,
like,
yep.
Yeah, but Acuna was just that good this year. But next up, though, Mike Trout was just reportedly now on the 60-day IL. He is not going to be playing for the rest of the year this year. Did Mike Trout just play his last game as a Los Angeles Angel?
Truth.
I'm going with truth. Truth. I think he's gone. I don't think he wants to be there anymore.
Clean sweep, truth. I'm with you, man. I think he's finally done, especially, you know, you'll never know who leaked the rumors. Was it internal? Was it Trout's camp or was it in the Angels camp about that meeting, about him being able to possibly leave or discuss the future of the organization? I think that was Trout's camp that leaked it personally. I think he wants out, and I think they're going to lay that little Easter egg so when he does leave, it isn't as big of a shock.
And I think, too, what's kind of crazy is that there was never really an uplifting moment, I think, in Mike Trout's Angels tenure. So it's kind of a little sad that he kind of leaves even on the downslope. He didn't even get to really say a goodbye. I think he's gone, though.
They will. Yeah. They will.
This team's going to suck for the next 5 years.
I think longer than that. There's an angel's curse for sure. Up next.
I was trying to be nice, but they're going to suck.
Now, Clayton Kershaw just got the second place all-time in Dodgers franchise history for the most wins last night on Saturday night. Is Clayton Kershaw the greatest pitcher in the 21st century? I'm going with truth here just because the dude has an MVP. He had all those Cy Youngs. And for a period of like 9 years, his ERA was 2.14. Mm. That's something we have never even seen. And he's a lefty?
Yeah.
Come on.
Jedi, I would have to say truth. But just because I'm struggling coming up with a pitcher, because he spent like, you know, his whole time in the 21st century. So you got to compare the longevity. Like there were some Hall of Fame pitchers that pitched into it, but not as long in the 21st. I would say truth. I think so, man. Absolutely dominant run.
Yeah. And let me just add, the way I'm thinking about this, I'm not including Roger Clemens. I am not including John Smoltz and all that, because they were 90s guys. And I would understand the argument there and stuff. Or the Pedro Martinez, the Randy Johnson. But look, they played in the 90s. Right. Yeah, if they played in those early 2000s, I think the discussion's very different. The only person that comes to mind is Justin Verlander. But Kershaw clears the board on numbers. His numbers are extremely better than Justin Verlander's.
I'm going to go fluke because the 21st century is a really long time.
It's only from 2001 to now.
And moving forward.
As of now.
In this 21st century. Dean's playing the next 65 years.
That's not what you said.
All right, whatever. Moving on. You're just going to piss me off. Whatever. Moving on.
You didn't say.
Whatever. Yeah, you're banking on someone that probably isn't even born yet. So good luck with that.
Banking. Next.
Not a bad.
That's called an investment.
Well, I don't like investments on this podcast.
I took Kershaw's curveball as one of the best pitches of all time, or one of the nastiest pitches of all time. Kershaw's really good. I would have to go and like actually, I'm going to say fluke just because I'm going to disagree, but I would have to go back and like actually pull some numbers from guys. He's really good. I remember a couple years where he wasn't, but I would just have to go back and look. I don't know why, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, Jedi, that 9 year stretch with an ERA in the twos, like that seals the deal, bro.
Like yeah, CeCe was gross.
CeCe was good.
Up next, and the final topic for this baseball edition of Truth or Fluke, will Corey Seager steal the MVP from Shohei Ohtani? He has a little bit of a case. He's batting .333. He has 32 home runs. He missed a lot of time, but so did Ohtani. Ohtani missed a lot of time. I don't know. I think it's – I'm going to say fluke here, but I see the argument.
I'm going truth. I think when it comes to voting, it's what have you done for me lately? If the Rangers get in, I don't know how you don't give it to them. You know, like that's just my opinion of the most valuable player to their team. You take Seager off the Rangers, they're not making the playoffs. They're not even in the conversation, right? You take Ohtani off the Angels, they're still ass. So,
and like, he plays two positions.
And he plays two positions. So yeah, look, Ohtani would have had a great year. The MVP would have been his to walk away with, but. I can't give it to a guy that's going to miss, what, 2 months of the season?
I think he's ended up playing like 130 games. And so is Corey Seager. That's why I say that. They're at about the same game average right now. And Corey Seager's going to end up playing more.
Yeah, but the difference is when that player missed the time. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like Seager missed it in the middle of the season.
Early and middle, yeah.
Yeah, so like for me, it's what have you done for me lately? Seager's team's going to get in. He's the more valuable player to his team than Ohtani was to the Angels. Mm-hmm. I think, in my opinion.
This is a tight one, but I'm going to go fluke just because I think Shohei sealed it already. But Seager put together one of the best offensive statistical seasons in baseball history from a shortstop. So, like, absolutely no slouch and was having an amazing year. But I still think Shohei takes it.
Up next. We got football edition of Truth or Fluke. We're talking Colorado. We're talking college football rankings. Caleb Williams, let's go. First up, Colorado will lose to USC worse than Oregon. I'm going to say fluke only because I don't see a way that Deion doesn't motivate this team to score a couple more points. I do think that they will lose the game, but it won't be as bad.
What was the final?
42-6. This is a fluke, and it's because USC will give up more points than Oregon. That is just how their defense is kind of set up. So, yeah, this is a fluke. They'll lose, but they're not going to lose as bad as they did to Oregon.
Where is the game?
I think it's actually Colorado's home.
I think, all right, I'm going with truth here because I do think that they're going to lose by more than 36. I think they may put up more points, but I think USC drops a 50-burger on them. And they can still score 20 some there and lose by 50, or lose by 36. They're getting 50 dropped on them. So I'm going to go with truth.
Up next, Caleb Williams. He's having a pretty good season so far. He won the Heisman Trophy last year. People are predicting that he's the most likely candidate to go back to back. Do you think that Caleb Williams will win the Heisman again in 2023? I'm going with truth.
So I'm going to say fluke, but it's with an asterisk. If I'm allowed to do that.
Dean is always breaking these rules.
Nah, but like when I explain it, you'll kind of understand, right? So I'm saying fluke if Marvin Harrison Jr.'s ankle is not going to require him to miss a lot of time. He hurt it during the Notre Dame game again. I'm pretty sure it was already hurt. So if he stays healthy, I think he is the best wide receiver in college football. I think he is a top three or four pick. Mm-hmm. If not the one, depending on who gets it, like if the Texans get it, they're not taking a quarterback, he'll go one. If Marvin Harrison Jr. can stay healthy, he will win the Heisman. If he's not, it will go to Caleb Williams.
So I do hope Marvin is all right because I'm looking at the 1-1 in fantasy football dynasty draft, and I think I'm taking Marvin Harrison with it. I'm going to go with fluke, but for a different reason and a different player. Two words, Bo Nix. Maybe a little recency bias. But the dude was stellar last year after the Georgia game for 11 or 12 games and then has come out firing this year. It's tough to win the Heisman back-to-back. You can put together a really, really good repeat performance and still not win the Heisman. So statistically, you know, and historically, I'm going with fluke here just because it's tough to win it back-to-back.
Dude, how old is Bo Nix?
He's either in his senior year or his fifth year, but he started as a true freshman at Auburn. So, like,
yeah.
He's been in the – you've heard the name Bo Nix forever. That's why.
Last topic up on the board for Football Edition of Truth or Fluke. Colorado will be back in the top 25 at some point this season. I'm going with Fluke. I think it's over. I don't think they're going to actually get anywhere close to the top 25 just because I see them losing a couple more games this year.
I'm also going to go Fluke. I think they're going to win – 6 or 7 games. I hope they're at least bowl eligible. That will only, you know, increase his recruiting stocks. So I do think it's a fluke, but I do think they go to a bowl.
Another clean sweep. I think it's a fluke. If they do, it's going to be like in the final rankings after the bowl game. Maybe they, like Dino said, maybe they win 6 games, 7 games, make it to a bowl and then finish, you know, with 8 with, you know, a couple of their losses being against top 25 teams. But it's not looking good, though.
But before we wrap up this edition of Hot Shots, it's time for the Houdini's final thought. A little bit of a throwback there.
Oh, I love that sound. So
love it, Jedi.
Like my final thought is it's like the Phoenix, you know, like when, you know, like they die and they like are resurrected again, right?
Rise from the ashes.
Yes. So my Phoenix for today is the Yankees season is officially over, right? It's done. They're eliminated. It's amazing. And rise from the ashes. The Rangers first. Preseason game was today.
Didn't even notice you rocking the jersey.
Dude, we lost to the Bruins, but I don't care. Die, Yankees. Rise, Rangers. We are so back. You know that it's a bad fucking time in my house when you're looking forward to the Knicks playing basketball. Ooh, this
yeah.
season. You know that you're down, shit's you're not down going bad. Right. I'm you're down, down bad. Bad, boys. But, look, I'm happy, right? Season's over. I don't need to question it anymore. If you would have brought the kids up in June, maybe we wouldn't be here right now. I'm going to get kind of pissed, but I'm not going to get too pissed because preseason's back. We're going to take a look at the new system under Lavalliette, and we're going to just watch some preseason hockey. Ranger season starts in 18 days. Couldn't be happier. Let's go, boys. Tap, tap it in, Happy. Just tap, tap, tap-a-roo.
Dude, I love hockey season, but you know the one thing I don't like is when the Rangers and the Pens play each other and you and me got to go at it again. Because, dude, the text back and forth during a Rangers-Pens game, usually, like, they start off pretty quick, and then we usually don't text each other in the third period at all. It's just, like, we have our fun, and then it's like, yeah, fuck this. Like, either way the game happens, someone's going to be pissed, and I think we come to an agreement. It's like, after the third, or after the second intermission, there's no text replying back.
Yo, and it sucks because, like, I love
it. Especially in the playoffs. Don't even get started about the playoffs.
Yeah, dude. I mean, like, dude, I love you like a brother. You've always, you know.
but we know, yeah.
But, like, and I'm never going to text you and be like, Penn sucks.
I know, and I'll never do the same. Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
So, mutual, like, agreement.
Yeah, dude. Like, oh. Allow me to throw that in, too, for final thought part two. I never text anybody if their squad loses. Ever.
I know. It's not worth it.
But why do people want to call me out when my squads lose? I know.
Never do
it. My squads suck. I know. I don't need somebody to tell me.
You know what's funny? I almost texted you about the Commanders today.
I'm glad you didn't.
Glad you didn't.
Glad you didn't, buddy. I would have drove the 45 minutes to your house and thrown a brick through your windshield. God, man. But hey, hockey season is 18 days away. What?
It's close.
That's going to do it all for us here at Hot Shots. If you ever want to keep up to date with your sports news, here's some cool trendings, Mount Rushmore's, draft rankings, whatever it is, then Hot Shots Podcast will always be the place for you. So subscribe, and you can follow to all of our social media platforms at Hot Shots Podcast. You'll always find us there. Other than that, though, we will talk to you next time.